Welcome to Mortification of Spin, a casual conversation about things that count, with Carl Truman and Todd Pruitt, a podcast of the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Let's join this week's conversation.
You are listening to Mortification of Spin. My name is Todd Pruitt. I'm the pastor at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend and co-host Carl Truman, who teaches at Grove City College and travels the world and in general is just trying to fix everything in the world. Carl, I'm grateful for your labors there. Now, Carl, before we go any further, I think it's important to point something out. As we consider the importance of various events throughout human history, and let's just pay attention to those things that are most important in church history. You have the Nicene Creed, so let's go back to the 4th century, and you have, of course, the Protestant Reformation. You have, Martin Luther nailing the 95 Theses to the door of the church there in Wittenberg in 1517, and then you have this day, the day on which we record the 500th episode of Mortification of Spin, surely a date that will go down as one of the more significant events in the history of the church. And to think, Carl, we started this thing with just such meager, humble resources, and here we are at the apex of podcasting elites. I would say that you and I are viewed the world over as the true innovators of this medium.
Like the reformed Joe Rogans, you mean, that kind of thing.
Yes, something like that. I mean, and so it's 500 of these, Carl. If you'll recall, we did this. The very first one has been, I guess, close to 12 years ago in a little room where we were sharing a mic. And, here we are with, millions of dollars to play with in the budget of the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals.
What are they paying you? That's what I want to know.
I think I'm still paying them to get to do this. And so, so yes, listeners, rejoice with us. You may want to take a day off this week just to commemorate it. You may want to add a celebratory meal to your family's kind of yearly observations of significant events. Mark this one out, 500 episodes of Mortification of Spin. And to make it even more existentially, what would be a good word for this? Existentially moving, but that's kind of pedestrian. I want Carl. You have access to a greater vocabulary than me. What?
Make it existentially pungent.
Existentially pungent. We have invited two brothers on, both of whom who have been on this show for a while, both of whom we've known in various ways and in various contexts. To talk about, I think mainly my contribution, to the success.
It's going to be a very, very short episode. So, this has been,
in all seriousness, time has just flown by. We do this because it's still fun and, we get free books and, we have asked two friends on to talk in part about the importance of friendship in ministry. We thought that would be a nice topic for this episode. And so joining us today are Kevin DeYoung and Matt Yusey. The four of us are kind of on this sort of daily texting loop where we only share very important, highly spiritual thoughts with one another as we encourage each other along the way. No funny videos or anything like that. But Matt and Kevin, thanks for joining us. It's great to see you brothers today. thanks for coming on.
Very good to be here. I don't know. I was told to wear this monstrosity.
It's beautiful, brilliant.
Beautiful it's shirt. Brilliant. It has a cutoff sleeves.
Yes, it
you,
does.
You don't want to see me in cutoff sleeves. I don't know that anyone wants to see any of us in cutoff sleeves, but I will perhaps regale my family sometime around the luxurious above ground pool in our backyard.
Mrs. DeYoung will thank you for it, I'm sure.
Something like that. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a part of the swag we offer through Mortification of Spin. The sleeveless t-shirt, which is you know, people might complain about the quality. I like to describe it as a very delicate gossamer fabric, intentionally silk-like, as it were, not cheap cotton. But that's just part of the luxury items we make available. You see, you're sporting some of the Mortification of Spin swag as well.
Yes, I was told it was a requirement for me to be allowed on camera. So there it
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
He's a rule follower. Thank you.
Yeah, I will be wearing that on my 20th anniversary coming up. I've been waiting for a special occasion to expose my family to me in it. So I appreciate you sending me one.
No one wants Matt exposing anything. So moving right along, though, at one of our church's prayer meetings, and it's great because we have youth that actually attend our prayer meetings, and one of the teenagers was wearing that shirt, and he was showing it off for me. He thought that was pretty impressive.
That
so
is impressive.
Word is getting out. I will say this: we are grateful for the folks who listen in. One of the encouraging things is when we hear from people from various parts of the world. We've heard from pastors in China, folks in Australia, across Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, South America, and New Jersey. And that's encouraging when we hear that folks are listening to it. Because, Carl, when it began, it was Bob Brady contacting you years ago and just said, hey, and podcasting was a very kind of new medium at that time. And
well,
he contacted you.
What had happened was all the important people at the Alliance had left to go to the Gospel Coalition. I think it was me, Derek Thomas, and Rick Phillips were left. And Bob called me and said, hey, we've nothing left to do. What do you fancy doing? And I said, well, how about I do a podcast or a radio show with my friend Todd Pruitt? You know, I've always needed a straight man to bounce my jokes off on that. And he's the guy. He's the stooge. So, and in those days, of course, I remember we interviewed Stephen Nichols, and because he may have been our first guest,
we didn't have
enough microphones, so we had to keep passing him a microphone every time he answered a question.
That's right. But, and Matt, you see, you were in the room because you and I were serving on staff together, at a church in the Philadelphia area.
Yeah, I was sitting on a couch just wondering what exactly it was I was witnessing.
It must have been like Elvis at Sun Records. There you are. You just didn't know this primeval force operating in front of you. You had no counter.
Yeah, it was like discovering the Beatles, you know? It was like being
by
in
accident.
Liverpool all of those years ago.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So. Well, I was going to say this one thing too. So my acquaintanceship with Kevin DeYoung, if you can call it that, goes all the way back. Kevin, the very first book you wrote with Ted Cluck, Why We Are Not Emergent. Okay. Uh-huh. So I was pastor of a Southern Baptist church in Wichita, Kansas. I was a Doctrines of Grace Southern Baptist guy, and was very concerned about the emergent movement. And this book comes out of nowhere, and guys are trading it around in my circles. And so I get a copy, I show it to the other guys that are on the staff of the church where I was the pastor. And that was, you know, like so many people, you know, that was my first exposure to what was going on. And I was going, man, this guy, you know, expresses what we were concerned about so well. And ever since then, I've so much appreciated your work and the great work you continue to do to bless the church and equip pastors.
Wow.
And that goes back. That seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Man, that was a long time ago. That was 2008. And funny story, I just got the 6-month royalty invoice for my books, and that one from Moody sold in the last 6 months 4 copies.
Nice. So
it's still trucking along.
Yeah.
So it sold pretty well for, you know, a couple of years, and then it's been, I mean, I don't know who those 4 people are, but thank you. I'd like to think that we helped kill the movement, and that also killed the sales of the book.
Right.
But a little known story, the title, sometimes publishers know best. The title that Ted and I wanted for the book, Why We're Not Emergent, was the subtitle. Mm-hmm. We wanted the title to be White Men Can't Dance, Why We're Not Emergent by Two Guys Who Should Be. I think probably wisely they took that off of the main title.
I think your instincts were right. That would have been awesome. You would have sold more than 4 copies. You would have sold more than 4 copies in the last year if you'd gone with that original copy.
But seriously, I've listened to a bunch of episodes of, and speaking about great titles, Mortification of Spin is a great title.
Isn't that great title? That's Truman all the way.
And I've been grateful for the friendships here and the text threads, which are equal part entertaining, occasionally edifying, but instructive. And it really is important. I know we're getting to this, but really is important to have friends. It's not a sufficient condition for being faithful in ministry, but I do think it is a necessary condition. Yeah. And it's really important to have people that you can, to know who you really are and joke with, but also be challenged by and know that they're looking over your shoulder in a good way.
Right. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
I mean, I think that the loss of friendship generally in our culture is one of the great problems that we face at the moment. I mean, I've spoke many times about how I think the rise of sexual identities is connected to having no category for close human relationship that is not psychologized. But I also think that the fact we move around a lot. I was thinking just the other day, I have some good friends in the Grove City area, but my closest friends are all at a distance. Mm. And that is an odd situation for society to be in at this point. You know, historically, your closest friends would also be your closest neighbors or close neighbors. Now, you know, we 4 are friends, but maybe we see each other once, twice a year, max. Mm-hmm. We communicate very, very regularly. And I appreciate certainly the friendships of Matt and Kevin, you know, very important to me. And Todd, take him or leave him. But we don't see each other very often. So friendship it's important, but it's also undergone a dramatic weakening, I think, in our culture as a whole, and also a dramatic transformation as a result of geographical mobility and technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, I met you. What year would that have been?
2011.
We brought you on to the staff where I was serving as pastor at church in the western suburbs of Philadelphia, and you and
the
I
place that shall remain nameless is this.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, have you noticed? Have you noticed that I was kind of?
Yes, it's unlucky to mention that name, man. You don't want to do it.
It's the church I was raised in. I came home, as it were.
Need I say more?
Yeah, and that's true. You came home. You were known there. And found out very quickly you were joining me in a foxhole in a war zone. And but, you know, isn't it true, guys? I mean, I know all 3 of you guys can testify that bonds are formed when you're under the gun. Bonds are formed when you're in the foxhole. And certainly that was true with Matt. We bonded very quickly because we were like-minded, and we were pushing towards a common cause and taking arrows all across our back every step of the way. And we've remained close since then. Matt and I are also a part of a group of 7 PCA pastors, and we communicate regularly, see each other several times a year, just for the very thing we're talking about here. And then Carl, I met Carl when I first moved to Philadelphia in 2009. A member of the church I served was on the board at Westminster Seminary, and he said, "Is there anybody from faculty at Westminster that you would like to meet?" Well, I'd just been reading about this big crisis they went through at Westminster Seminary over the last couple of years before that, like 2007, 2008. And I'd been reading about it from afar, and I was fascinated that this seminary that I'd heard, you know, was this bastion of conservative confessionalism and all, had gone through a real crisis along those lines, and that Truman was kind of the tip of the spear in seeking to bring a remedy to that, which he did. And so I was, you know, there were like these rogue websites about how awful Truman was and basically Darth Vader and that kind of thing. And I said, man, I've got to meet with Carl. I want to pick his brain just to see what it's been like. You know, I was just fascinated. And we got together for breakfast one morning. And after that, we said, let's do this again. And we've just formed a good friendship there. And so so many of my closest friends, there is this kind of, oftentimes in the thread of the friendship, there's this shared struggle oftentimes that you go through. You have war wounds that you're able to compare because you empathize with each other and you've walked difficult roads. And friendships are often formed in that kind of crucible of pressure and heat.
And it's really important to have, I love just the way you were tracing that out, to have friendships that by God's grace can last for a long time. Not only is there a sweetness to it, but it also means that people knew you before you were, you know, whatever you are now, whatever, you know, Carl's probably, you know, texting the Pope by now. I mean, we don't know what sort of, I mean, he's become very important.
Yeah. I don't think the Pope would give me a cell phone.
No, that's
maybe Benedict. Maybe the last texting Benedict. Yeah.
Yeah. The last one. But it, you know, it's really important that people who have been with you for a long time, because they're the people who will, like this. This is very, I would dare say, male camaraderie. Right. We condemn and criticize because we care, because it's a way of forming male bonds. And like you, Todd, I have a group of guys from seminary. We've gotten together for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since I went to Gordon-Conwell, you know, there's some theological variance in sure. that group, but still, you know, all evangelical guys and friends. And I think we've really kept us out of, you know, doing any number of dumb and or, you know, wrongheaded things. Yeah. And when I see guys in ministry at whatever level, the highest levels to, you know, what seems to be very low stat, anyone, mm-hmm. and they don't have people that they can just hang out with, that will tease them, that will joke with them, that they're on a text thread with, that, hey, who are you going to go and watch a game with or whatever you're in?
Right.
That's a red flag. And so I hope anyone out there, if you don't have that, try to look for it, mm-hmm. you know, be the person that said, can we get a meal? And if you have those friendships that have been around a long time, you know, try not to lose them. I mean, that's yeah. one gift for all the problems with our phones. One gift is it's never been easier to have some kind of communication with people at a distance. And I'm thankful for you brothers yeah. in that.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure all of you have read statistics about men in ministry and high levels of loneliness and isolation. Some of it has to do with what Carl named earlier. We tend to be a little mobile. I mean, there are some pastors that go and stay someplace for 45 years, but that's exceedingly rare. Most of us have several major moves in our lifetimes. Add to that just being a pastor makes it challenging to be close friends with the people you see most often. Not friendly and having a good, warm relationships, but, you know, those kind of deep friends where you can be vulnerable, and there's certain complexities for that when you're a pastor. But I the costliness to the isolation in terms of falling into sin, which of course we see that, and even, you know, certain statistics on suicide. I'm not trying to go too dark here, but that's a recognized problem, depression and then self-harm among ministers. And I wonder how much of that is tied to the tendency of men in ministry to become isolated. There's got to be a close connection there, I would guess.
You're absolutely right. And I think, you know, what's complexifying all of that is the pastoral dynamic. You really can have friends in your church, but mm-hmm. you're right. There always is a layer of complexity. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, sometimes it's the fault of us men or pastors to not be comfortable with peers. We're used right. to certain unidirectional kind of relationships. So people who are peer, we've lost the ability to do that. Sometimes there's pastors are just weird dudes who don't know how to have a real conversation.
That's right.
And talk to people. And then, I know you've, written about this, Carl, and you alluded to it earlier, the psychologizing. I think men in particular, because every relationship has become, there's our whole culture has a sexual overlay to everything. I remember somebody writing, it's hard to watch the Lord of the Rings and the deep friendship between Sam and Frodo. And from our 21st century, you look and you think, people say, well, was that supposed to be a homosexual relationship? It's like, we don't even have a category for what deep, close male friendship. I love you. We're in the battle together. The only way to think and portray the depth of a relationship is in a sexual way, which means that men in particular are very nervous and don't even have models or know what it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, think of preaching on David and Jonathan.
Right.
I bet, certainly I have done this, and I guess if you guys have appreciated it, you feel an obligation today, right at the start, to say, this isn't a homosexual relationship. I bet that's never crossed Spurgeon's mind. I bet it never crossed Calvin's mind. I bet it never crossed Bernard of Clairvaux's mind. It never crossed Augustine's mind. You go back through history. Nobody would ever have had to exegete that passage and make their first point, let's get it out of the way. It's not homosexuality. That just shows how transformed the notion of friendship is in our culture.
Yeah. Matt Youssi, you're a pastor, and you are also, you would be classified in these types, you'd be classified as an extrovert. You're a friend maker. You're a connector. You're outgoing. You're hospitable. It's clear you're always really comfortable with people. All those are really good qualities.
Yeah, keep going. Yeah.
and you're a beautiful man and very powerful. How do you navigate the whole issue of friendships within the church that you pastor? What's complex about that for you?
I like to think that I've been blessed because I serve in West Palm Beach, Florida. I'm not from here. I'm from Philadelphia. I've lived, as you guys know, pastored in Hawaii before here, and then Pennsylvania before that, Seattle before that. And so for me, the people I'm closest with who live around me are my church members, or people who, God willing, will become church members here. And that's a tremendous blessing. I'm almost free to focus my energy on the people God's called me to serve. And I love that. I also have a group of friends that I grew up with, the guys who, as Truman likes to say, guys who if a bar fight breaks out, will not hesitate to take a bar stool and take it to whoever.
The barroom test. They're not hiding in the gents, pretending nothing's going on. Yes, but those are the ones to watch.
I think thinking about the four of us and the blessing it is to have our friendship is the benefit of having brothers who are also in ministry, who are not local, who I can not only joke with, not only, process the culture with, but also ask advice with in a, and I hate using this word in a sense, but in a safe way. I know that that if I ask a personal, complex, pastoral question of you guys and tell you what I'm considering doing, you're not going to judge me. And also, I know that I'm not slandering anybody who's who you're going to know about. Mm-hmm. There is a tremendous benefit for my ministry in having your guys not only wisdom and objective perspectives, but almost anonymity about the people I'm talking about. And just, not that I've had a necessarily hard go of it here at the call that I'm at now, but I know in the circumstances I have had, you guys have been tremendous. And it never takes more than seems like 20 minutes for you guys all to respond when I have a question. And that's, I think that is God's providential blessing to fend off feelings of loneliness and isolation, because my brothers are right there.
Mm-hmm. And I think just to add another layer to it, you know, Presbyterianism is good because of its connectionalism.
Yes.
But my experience, my friends have not been fellow presbyters in my presbytery. My friends are guys like you. And actually, this doesn't apply to you three, but I've also appreciated having friends outside my denomination. Because it means when you know, not to put it too crudely, but you can sort of get together and moan about your denomination and your friend moans about his denomination freely without any sort of skin in the game, so to speak. So, you know, presbytery is meant to provide you with that camaraderie. But actually, I think it's more the informal friendships that do that. Presbyteries are very good for procedural issues. But in terms of personal support, and survive. I mean, and I'm out of the ministry in many ways. I fill pulpits round about. You guys are still in it, but when I was in the ministry, I found it was the informal friendships that were the critical thing. Presbytery was important, but the really important thing were the friends I had.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, how do you deal with or think about or work through friendships with the men you serve with on staff? You know, the other teaching elders, and how does that work? How do you nurture that? What does that look like in your experience?
I've been really fortunate, blessed to serve with good men. I mean, we have a fairly big church, and so that means we got 7, 8, 9 other TEs. I mean, we were just talking about the day. It's really an embarrassment of riches to have all of these guys. I think there's some things I don't do well. I think I'm not a great manager. I'm not the sort of, coach that's like, I'm here to get the best out of you and to drive you to your 6-month goals. And there's some pastors that's probably a really good thing to do. And most of our, you know, my senior staff are my age or kind of thereabouts or a little older. So it's not, you know, young guys first call into ministry. But I think one of the keys is you have to plan for inefficiencies. Relationships happen around quote unquote wasted time. So at every church I've served at, we have every other week, we read a book together. And one of the reasons obviously is to learn from that book. But an even just as important reason is it gets us together around a table for an hour. We laugh, we share stories. The book is a launching pad to talk about all sorts of other things. That's why we do retreats. It's why, you know, a conference can be good. You get in the car and you share a room for a few days. All of that in ministry. So I would say many of my closest friends at the church are the pastors that I serve with. It doesn't always work that way. You're not going to feel equally connected to every single person, but I love that. In fact, when people have said, what are the two things I like most about ministry? I usually have said preaching and the people that I get to serve with.
Yeah, that's really good. Before Carl, before I turn it over to you, I identify with that very much. I mean, my experience with the other teaching elders that I serve with on staff, and there's 5 teaching elders on staff here at Covenant. And, Matt knows who they are. Matt's been friends with a few of them for far longer than I even knew them. In fact, I'm at Covenant because of Matt Ussi in a lot of ways. And if that was it, I'd owe Matt my next child or whatever. But, the thing that I've appreciated so much about the brothers I serve with, and this wasn't anything I cultivated in them. They're just quality men. Is the very thing that you were kind of describing, Kevin. We spend some inefficient time together because that's where the friendships form, and we talk about deep stuff, and we challenge each other. And as we will see men fall, pastors, some of them well known, some of them not well known. When we see those stories, we ask ourselves questions. We say, okay, brothers, you know, how are we doing? How do we need to be more intrusive with one another on certain things? And we'll read stuff together. And then every single Tuesday, I mean, I did that earlier today. Every single Tuesday, we have lunch together. We'll have staff meeting until noon, and then the pastors go for lunch, and we'll spend 2 hours at least eating lunch. And sometimes we're talking about heavy stuff. Sometimes we're just laughing a lot. It's not the most efficient, quote, time of the week, but those are the moments where those men become more than just work colleagues to me, but guys who they know me fairly well. And that's been a huge blessing. So pastors cultivate that, work on that. It's a good thing. So.
Yeah. And we shouldn't forget, of course, that friendship has a theological significance here. When God meets with Moses in the tabernacle tent of meeting, he speaks to Moses as a man speaks to his friend face to face. And when Jesus in the upper room discourse is declaring himself fully to his disciples, he says, "No longer do I treat you as servants, but I treat you as friends because now you know about my mission. Now I've revealed myself to you." And I think friendship, if friendship is important to the heart of God, then friendship should be important to the heart of his servants as well. So it's been a real pleasure to spend some time with three good friends today, Todd Pruitt, Kevin DeYoung, and Matt Usey. We hope you found the discussion edifying. Please go to mortificationofspin.org, our website, where you stand a chance to win some of the swag. You too can look terribly dressed in, you know, I don't even have categories for sleeveless shirts, but you know, you can look terribly dressed in these sleeveless shirts with a great logo. If you
Kevin DeYoung's next book jacket cover photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. That shirt.
I'm inclined to say, you know, first prize is one of those shirts. Second prize is two of those shirts. Anyway, it's been great
third
to be with you.
A set of steak knives.
We hope you'll join us next time on Mortification of Spin. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Mortification of Spin, a podcast of the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. For more on topics like this, visit mortificationofspin.org, where you can find other articles by Carl and Todd, browse the archive of past episodes, and make a donation. We'll talk to you next time on Mortification of Spin.